Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
We want Roman. We want Roman. Right, Cam? Are you almost kind of rooting for Roman Reigns after that episode tonight?
No, but it was effective. Like they did what they needed to do to get the crowd into it. So yeah, well done, I guess. But no. He's fine, but no.
Yeah, I thought if you wanted to give Roman Reigns the best chance at getting cheered so Vince McMahon can have a big I told you so moment at SummerSlam, well, this was an effort. This was a big effort towards trying to make that happen. Yeah. But if you would have said Vince McMahon's ace up his sleeve to get fans to cheer and chant for Roman is Lesnar being a meanie to Paul Heyman, I would have said there's no way that can work. But boy, did they make Lesnar seem nasty. They even had Paul Heyman. And I think there's a little sleight of hand going on here because Heyman is appreciated and respected by the very fans who boo Roman Reigns. You know, I mean, there's a big crossover there. So Heyman saying, yeah, Lesnar is the worst Universal Champion of all time. He's not there for the WWE Universe. He had to use a corporate speak, unfortunately, or the charities. And it was interesting that's one of the big angles that Vince took at the end here to try to get fans to go, yeah, you know what? I don't like Roman, but I'm going to cheer when he finally gets rid of Lesnar. And so my question to you, Cam, is, if it didn't work on you, do you think it worked on enough fans where instead of rejecting the match outright come SummerSlam Sunday, there will be more male fans just cheering the elimination of Lesnar from the WWE title scene?
I do, and I think you really hit on it. The way that he treated Paul Heyman, we always thought that Brock Lesnar didn't like anybody, but he respected Paul Heyman and kind of, he was his advisor. He was his confidant. That's who was his go-between when it came to all this business and financial speak. And when you see him being nasty to Paul Heyman, that's really a turning point. I thought they really did hit home Brock's lack of interest in what was going on. Not so much showing up, but even when he's there, he doesn't seem to be bothered with what's going on. They have him outright say that he doesn't watch the show. Like they have him read magazines while the show's going on. He refuses to take Paul Heyman's phone and actually watch the clip of Roman Reigns talking to him. And then you let Roman do the things that they do to where it's like, you know, make you my bitch because that's still cool in 2018, I guess. And it got a good reaction from the crowd. Like they played this all in front of the proper crowd. And I do think that enough people will be interested in it for it not to be kind of an outright rejection. So, yeah, I think it was effective.
We're going to find out in not too long. But, yeah, an interesting evening. It's just fun watching Vince McMahon give it his all. He wants Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar to get a certain response at SummerSlam. And this is, ultimately, I joke that, you know, Paul Heyman is a sympathetic figure, but Kurt Angle was too. You know, this is now, if you boo Reigns, in a way, it's a de facto booing of Kurt Angle. You know, you've got to cheer the guy who's going to beat up the guy who beat up Kurt Angle for no good reason. So yeah, it was an interesting night. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and they even had Roman talk to Kurt Angle in a way that wasn't condescending, but did make him sympathetic. Like you, like Kurt Angle. Like I understand that this is what you need, but at your core, like you're the Olympic gold medalist. Like you are intensity, integrity, intelligence. Yeah. Like this isn't who you are, but I understand why you're doing it. I think that did the job of humanizing Kurt Angle and not making him look like less, even though they did go the route of like the McMahon route of, hey, if you don't do your job right this one night, I'm going to fire you. Like he treated Paul Heyman. So I think that was kind of a misstep. But other than that, they did make it seem like Kurt Angle really didn't have a lot of choice in the matter. And with Roman Reigns talking to him, like, I understand why this is happening. I do think that when you play it at the end, that Brock Lesnar attacks him, Kurt Angle and Roman Reigns do seem to be on the same team. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's set the table here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, July 30th, 2018.
following Monday Night Raw, and we're here to take your calls and talk to an on-site correspondent and answer your email questions. My co-host today is Cameron Hawkins, who is co-host of the East Coast Cast, and also You, Me, and Wrestling, a VIP audio show. And Cam will talk more about those as the show progresses. But I do want to let listeners who are streaming us live know that you can participate in this show right now by calling 347-215-8558. It should be on your screen, on your browser, if you're streaming us. That's 347-215-8558. And then just push 1 on your keypad if you want to participate in the show. Just push 1 on your keypad, and that'll move you into the standby queue for callers. We welcome your thoughts on our opening statements here, and also any questions or comments on the entirety of Raw. And let's go right away to a phone call. We'll go to 843 as our first caller. 843, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Wade, TJ, South Carolina.
Hey, TJ, thanks for kicking off the caller portion. What's on your mind after Raw tonight?
All right, so you may have to edit this, Wade, but I have to go ahead and say my piece. As a wrestling fan, at the beginning, I started off like 6 years old, Ultimate Warrior fan. I stopped, I think when I was like 14 or 15, my buddy Mike got me back in. I became a Stone Cold Steve Austin fan all the way through. Like I became a diehard wrestling fan right then, from 1997, 1998, Stone Cold Steve Austin fan, I was diehard in. When he started waning, 2002, I had to kind of figure out who's my new favorite wrestler. Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar, 2002, I became a Brock Lesnar fan. I feel like I am not the only one that kind of followed Brock from his beginnings in WWE to UFC, well, to now. So I just want to kind of give you my thought process and my emotions kind of watching Brock through all of this. Well, that's Brock Lesnar. Everybody in the world knows Brock Lesnar. I'm watching this, thinking this. I'm going, all right, well, somebody needs to beat the shit out of Brock Lesnar. Well, who? Reigns. Well, that's all I have. I love you guys. I'm out.
All right, thanks. I'm like,
see you, buddy.
All right, take care. Cam, I mean, I get where he's coming from. Your take.
I think the majority of it I actually agree with. Like, it's quintessential Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar's never claimed to be student of the game. He's never claimed to have this attachment to all the greats who came before him. Brock Lesnar is a unique talent. He understands he has talent, understands he can get paid for it, and the level of interest that he expresses is not going to affect his bottom line. And to me, I think a lot of those things are admirable. So few people are special. And so I'm not offended when somebody maximizes, you know, their visibility and their earning potential. And in maximizing that, that means they have to do less than others. Like, that's not a bad thing to me. I do agree that the fact that one guy has been presented as the one to beat him and that it hasn't been received well is absolutely a problem. And you had ample opportunity to put other people in that position. Like, if you look at that Brock Lesnar-AJ match that was just so well received, there's no reason that AJ Styles can't be that guy because he's proven that he can hang with him in the ring, and Brock respects him enough to put in maximum effort. Like, we've seen this. We watched it. So, you know, the rejection of Roman Reigns, even though, like we said tonight, I thought they did a good job, and Vince definitely put his best foot forward in trying to get the crowd behind Roman Reigns, the chance and everything. Brock Lesnar is just, he's authenticity. And I think that more so than anything, I'm a fan of that. So the things that he does, even as they relate to WWE, don't bother me. But it would be nice if we had another contender that people could latch on to have interest in the title and more interest in Brock Lesnar.
All right. I think one of the predicates of this all working for the viewers is that they are loyal to WWE and the cause of being a WWE fan more than they are an advocate for what WWE actually does with their loyalty as a viewer. And the loyalty, being a loyal WWE fan, is earned through entertaining fans, yes, but giving them actual wrestlers to actually look up to, admire, root for, cheer, and want to see get what they think they deserve in terms of a main event push and being treated properly and cast properly and rewarded for their what they stand for, their likability, their effort. And WWE is kind of selling the idea that Lesnar isn't so much against a wrestler that they like. He's against the effort and loyalty that a champion is supposed to exhibit, and that he's falling short of that. So to get fans to cheer Reigns, they're actually trying to get fans to cheer or to boo Lesnar and to cheer the cause that is WWE as a profit-seeking, publicly traded corporation presenting entertainment with the express goal of bringing smiles to people's faces. And that's what you're cheering for by virtue of being for whoever Brock is standing opposite of. I think there's going to be plenty of fans at SummerSlam who go, yeah, Brock, he doesn't stand for what they're supposed to. And then, as TJ's saying, Reigns' music plays, and it's like, oh, that's right. We got to cheer this guy? I still don't like him. And it can still backfire. And that's what we'll be talking about for the next few weeks is, you know, what will play out when fans are really being presented with Roman Reigns as the symbolic, he is symbolic of the opposite of what Brock Lesnar is standing for. And Brock is standing for things that, if you kind of think about it, because you're not just drinking the WWE corporate profit-seeking mission statement, and the fans are just seen as pawns in that game to impress Wall Street, if you're not on board with that, then what Lesnar did is actually admirable. It was actually babyface. It was, I'm going to do what I'm contractually forced to do, because certainly in real life, WWE enforces their contracts with their wrestlers. So Lesnar's enforcing the letter of the law on his contract with them. Being mean to Paul Heyman doesn't really make anybody a babyface. So it's interesting. I mean, you know, when you kind of step back and you go, well, as TJ said, Lesnar's being who Brock always was. Why is that a bad thing if you've liked Brock for a long time? Cam, back to you.
It's interesting that, you know, Ultimate Warrior and Steve Austin were his other favorite wrestlers coming up, because Ultimate Warrior is notorious for holding out for more money and doing the bare minimum of what was asked of him. You know, and then Steve Austin, who, you know, was great in the ring, but Steve Austin's character is going against authority. So there's a common thread between people he was a fan of, whether it was in the ring or outside of it. Wade, did you know that Brock Lesnar was the worst Universal Champion of all time?
It's a short list, but I did not know that.
I'm trying to find a measurement, because he has more title defenses than Finn Balor, and I think KO and Goldberg. They've made more money with him as champion. I'm trying to find the measurement.
But like, yeah, see, you're forgetting it's about charity work and showing up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, and it's funny, because I was definitely during the show praising Titus O'Neil for just being the most charitable and giving and selfless person ever in the company. And that's great. And it's fantastic that he's all those things. I don't look at Brock Lesnar for not doing any of those things. Like, he shows up to work. Like, again, wait, I always say this. If we were allowed to show up to work half as much as everybody else and make more money doing it, we'd all take it. Nobody's taking a pay cut so the other people at their job can get more money. It's just not the way it works. So we shouldn't hold it against this guy, but, you know, wrestling.
Yep. All right, let's go to 814 next. 814, state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Nick from Bedford, PA.
Nick, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I was disappointed when the show opened and there was not a $10 salute for Nikolai Volkov, nor a salute for Brian Christopher.
Well, Nick, they did have the graphics on the screen at the top of the show that acknowledged their deaths. 10-bell salutes aren't done often, nor for former wrestlers who were not super top-level wrestlers. So, Cam, I thought that they did okay with it. I'm glad they acknowledged both of them. It made sense. I understand, you know, why they did it the way that they did it, and it's, I think it follows the pattern. Do you agree?
Agreed. Like Brian Christopher is a big part of my viewing experience as, you know, a 30-something fan that grew up in the Attitude Era. Nikolai Volkov is a bit before my time, but I understand his significance to the WWE. But neither one are those super top-level world title contenders or champions. And they are just, you know, people are treated differently based on what they contributed in life. So I didn't have a problem with it. We had the graphic at the beginning. And, you know, Brian Christopher is WWE family, being the king's son. And so I'm sure there's the important things. Superstars and management probably definitely reached out to Jerry Lawler. A bunch of them will probably be at the funeral. And so, you know, I think they did a nice thing in acknowledging them. But I think the more important things are going to happen when we can't see them. And, you know, it could very well have been a thing where, you know, maybe Jerry Lawler didn't want all the glitz and glamour surrounding it, because it is it's a very tense situation if you kind of followed it over the weekend over the last year. So it might have been a thing where drawing as little attention to it as possible was for the best. But I'm sure that they'll spend time with Jerry Lawler and family and, you know, do everything they can to make sure they got to see through this stuff. But I think they did a good job.
Yeah. Yep. All right. The number two story on Raw is the announcement that Ronda Rousey is going to be in the ring in a match next week against Alicia Fox. Cam, they're giving away a Ronda Rousey match on TV. They're giving it a week of hype. Did they do enough to make it seem special enough?
I think they did. And just salute to Alicia Fox. She is, if you compare everything, eras and all that, she's one of the most enduring acts ever in wrestling. Like, yep. Alicia Fox still has a job, Wade. It's been a long time.
Yes.
And she's found a way to make it work.
Real quick, before we do jump to our on-site correspondent, I want to sneak in and mention that if you have been listening to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, our blue brand, on Thursdays and Fridays directly through either the Podcast One app or the Podcast One website, we have made some changes, and so you won't be able to find the show through there. But you can find the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast on Thursday and Friday at Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker. Spreaker.com/show/WKPWP. Now, you can also just search Wade Keller at Spreaker.com, and the show will pop up. Also, we have made the move. We followed Lillian Garcia over to Spreaker, and you can join us and subscribe to your popular podcast apps. In fact, we are going to be available now in more places than ever because of this move, and we hope you will be sure to follow us there. So if you have been listening specifically through those two places, you'll have to switch. You can listen to us through Downcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Beyond Pod, Dogcatcher, Stitcher, and on, just search Wade Keller. If you have been listening directly through the Podcast One app or streaming from the Podcast One website, you'll have to make the move. The vast majority of you haven't had to do anything, and you're still getting the Thursday and Friday shows through the feed, which continues to be the same. So just wanted to get that note out there because we got a couple people confused about that, and we look forward to talking to you. By the way, this Thursday, it's going to be Greg Parks for the flagship, and we're going to talk about all kinds of subjects on the flagship, wide-ranging topics, just as we did last week with Todd Martin, who was the guest co-host on the Thursday flagship. And then Friday, it is part one of the Tony Schiavone interview. It's a two-parter. Bruce Mitchell joined me for that interview. VIP members got to hear that over a week ago, the full interview uninterrupted by ads or commercial spots. If you're not a VIP member, get on board with all the perks that come with VIP membership, including early access to our interviews, ad-free access to this show and all of our shows, a ton of VIP-exclusive podcasts, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, our post-pay-per-view roundtable podcasts, and so much more. Alan Cunahan's Pro-Res Paradise, covering the Japanese and European indie scenes, among other areas, in unmatched fashion in terms of knowledge and enthusiasm. The Fix with Todd Martin that I host, and the Bruce Mitchell audio shows that I host throughout the week, and so much more. So many VIP exclusives. You can check out details on VIP membership. It's not just podcasts. That's a big part of it. You also get the weekly PW Torch newsletter and access to over 1,500 back issues dating back to the late 1980s. You can catch up on my star ratings on all the WrestleManias and all SummerSlams and just about every pay-per-view since the late 1980s. And also, you can add for access to our mobile site and our desktop site and so much more. Check out details, a full rundown of all the benefits at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. We'll be back right after this with our on-site correspondent.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back, and we're now joined by our on-site correspondent, Enrique, who attended Raw in Miami tonight. Enrique, welcome to the show. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me, Louis.
So let's get right to the main talking point in segment one, which was the chant at the end of Raw of "We want Roman, we want Roman." Were you part of that group, Enrique, chanting "We want Roman" at the end?
No, actually, I wasn't. And to be honest, that didn't sound very loud in the arena. What we caught on at the end of the segment was Daniel Cormier chant. That sounded like it was the most overpowering chant at the end of the show.
Okay, so now I got to just float a conspiracy theory. Was there a chant at all that you heard of "We Want Roman"? I'm wondering if we got like fed some pre-tape thing over the TV.
There was, okay. But it wasn't like it wasn't the overpowering. It was faint, to be honest. The Cormier chants were what really took center stage, and I was a little surprised at how loud it got.
And when did the Cormier chants peak? At the end, after Raw was kind of ending and Lesnar was leaving, or during the segment before that?
It was during the segment. It was after he hit Angle with the F5, but before he got on Heyman, it sounds like that's when it really started to pick up.
Interesting. Did you pick up on that, Cam?
No, I think I heard it like you heard it, Wade.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's really interesting.
So, they want the story to be fans were behind Roman. If there was a pocket of plants chanting "We want Roman" and it didn't catch fire, but they mic'd those fans to make it seem like it was more than it was, I wouldn't put it past them, but I have no evidence that that's the case other than it was loud on TV and felt and sounded faint to Enrique. So I'm curious if we get more points of view on this from other people in the building. Interesting. Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
No, that's interesting that it was so loud on TV. But so the last Raw that was here was New Year's Day, and I attended that one too. And I'll tell you that the crowd was slightly more in support of Roman this time around than that time. They booed him at first when he first came out. It was maybe like 60-40 boos. But as soon as Heyman came out and Brock's talk started and UFC stuff started, it was like they all just said, you know, whatever, it's going to happen. We're all going to gather behind Roman because at least he's the guy who's here every week and not talking about going to the UFC. So that was a big change to where the crowd was in January, for instance.
Interesting, yeah. So movement towards Reigns. And did you think the way that Lesnar was portrayed throughout the show, I assume you saw the skits of him kind of chilling out on the couch and blowing off Heyman. What was the crowd reaction when Lesnar did finally come out?
It was the initial cheer, I guess, just because, you know, when the music hits, it's excitement. But once he came out and stood up there, it was booze. It was it really feels like the fans and the universe is kind of against him showing up at UFC and being there, where our biggest problem with him is that he's never here and he's our champ, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Cam, what do you want to ask Enrique? If we kind of stay focused on Reigns Lesnar for the moment, if you got a follow-up on that.
Yeah, what was the reaction to his speech with Kurt Angle backstage? Roman kind of acknowledging that Kurt Angle has to do things he wouldn't normally do. You know, him kind of sucker punching Baron Corbin and Kurt reacting to that. Like, what was the reaction to, I guess, Kurt Angle in general tonight and then his interaction with Roman Reigns?
Kurt Angle had a pretty positive reaction overall. In that segment in particular, it was kind of lukewarm at first, and then he said, okay, we're going to have to tell you to get out of the building, and they booed him. But when Roman started telling them that, you know, this is, we know, I know this is what you got to do, and stuff like that, it sounded like the crowd really started backing Roman and understood where Angle was coming from. And then once he sucker punched Corbin, that just got him. That was the hook. So it went really well in terms of what they were probably expecting in crowd reaction for that segment. It wasn't too negative, but more like understanding. And then here's something fun at the end for you guys to enjoy.
If they enjoyed the sucker punching of Corbin by Reigns, how did the crowd react to the Lesnar-Heyman dynamic, and did it ever change based on the circumstances?
No, it was every time Lesnar came up on the couch, it was booze at first, and then every conversation was different. So the first couple were just, you know, Heyman begging. The last one got a different reaction when Lesnar actually reacted to him and started getting firm with him. They started booing. Like, Heyman has a lot of sympathy from the crowd for what he is, an advocate for Lesnar, which at this point it doesn't seem like anyone likes. They have a lot of sympathy for him, so that kind of swayed the crowd reaction into support of Heyman, but still against Lesnar in every segment that they put up.
Let's talk about some other things on the show. Who was the most popular wrestler? It seemed as if it would be a competition between Seth Rollins and Ronda Rousey. Maybe Braun Strowman in that mix. How about your take?
That's exactly the three. So Strowman didn't have as strong of a reaction as I thought he was going to have, but he had the shortest segment of any of those three. Ronda Rousey was amazingly over, even more than what it sounds like on TV normally, because I've been kind of skeptical about it, and everybody was super behind her. And when she started getting into it, that she started getting physical with Alicia Fox and everything, everybody was going crazy. It was kind of surprising. I didn't think it was going to be that much of a positive reaction, but everybody was all over it. And then Rollins and McIntyre had, I think, the best match and segment in general of the whole show. Everybody was into that match. That had the best crowd involvement, energy level. Everybody was chanting, "This is awesome," from really soon on into the match. That match started off really hot with Rollins going over through the ropes to hit McIntyre outside really soon. So everybody was really into that match.
Cool. Cam, what have you got for Enrique?
The show, you know, opens with Roman Reigns, but in that first hour, you get a really long, like, three-segment Finn Balor-Baron Corbin match. How was the reaction to that live?
That was the first thing that we noticed in the show. We're like, man, this match is – I'm pretty sure we went through two commercial breaks. This is just dragging and dragging. And it got to a couple points where they were repeating moves and interchanges, and the crowd really started – picking up on that. It got towards before the finishers started accumulating, which is when the crowd really got into it. We started hearing in our section, we started hearing NXT chants. We started hearing Bullet Club chants, Too Sweet. So they were starting to lose them. Once the finishers started and Finn hit the first stomp on that, he hit them between the legs, it started picking up, but it went way, way too long. That match really lost everybody towards the middle of it.
They also seem to be rejecting or entertaining themselves during Dash and Dawson and Matt and Bray.
E-Team and, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Talk about that, because, man, there were, what, CM Punk chants? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. So the segment before that went over pretty well. B-Team's over. The Leaders of the World came out. Revival came out. Everybody cheered everything. And then when we all thought that the segment was over after Hardy and Wyatt kicked the Revival out of the ring, they went to commercial, I'm assuming, because everything got quiet in the arena, and then they just came back and told us, oh, this is going to be a match right now, and everybody was like, I mean, all right, whatever, we kind of just saw them clear the ring, what else are they going to do? So they had a pretty negative reaction to the rest of the of the match. It wasn't even a bad match, but it's just after the first segment, they kind of got all the juice out of the crowd, and then there was nothing left for him for the next couple 10 minutes.
Well, was the crowd more for Dash and Dawson or more for Bray and Matt, given that Bray and Matt were kind of heelish last week and kind of heelish this week, I thought. And Dash and Dawson, to some crowds, are kind of, you know, the people who watch NXT, they think, hey, they deserve a bigger break. What was the crowd reaction to that match?
They welcomed them really well. So when the music first hit and they came out, there was a lot of cheers. Once the match started, every time Hardy or Wyatt got any sort of offensive move in, it sounded like it was a much louder reaction than any time the Revival guys got anything in.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's. I was surprised by the crowd chants of that match. I felt like it had to be. I don't think it was just because Dash and Dawson and Bray and Matt were boring them. I think it felt like it had to be the culmination of some other frustrations on the show, and it sounds like it kind of started early for whatever reason with Finn and Corbin just going so long.
Yeah, I think that's the combination of that match going so long and then already getting the feel like we were done with this set of storylines when they cut the commercial and then getting fed basically for a second segment, it threw everyone off.
Yeah, interesting. There was a long break too for the video package on Evolution, the pay-per-view, and I could imagine that testing the fans' patience. Did it? Did it seem like people were glued to the screen or growing kind of impatient with how long they had to look at a big screen?
They weren't growing that impatient. I think, but it's because it was obvious that once they start showing that package, everybody anticipated what was next, which was the Natalya Alicia Fox match, which would bring Ronda Rousey with it. So there was not as much, and it was still early in the show, so there wasn't as much frustration with it as much as like, okay, we just got through this really long match with all these segments, and now we're going to get one of the stars that we really came to see with Rousey coming out during that match. Because once the Evolution package started, we figured this is going to be the next match.
Okay. Fans seem to love chanting Walk with Elias, even though he's always mean to the fans, but fans can't resist the chant along. And then Bobby Lashley came out and sang very poorly, but was a good sport about it. Talk about the crowd ebb and flow during that segment, and if you think what they were going for is what they ended up getting or not.
It's exactly like you say. So Elias comes out, and everybody's 1,000% behind them through the first segment. Even when Bobby comes out, they're still with Elias. When Bobby says he's going to sing with Elias, everybody cheered. And then up until the physicality starts, that's when everybody switches over to Lashley's side. So it's like they really enjoy the Elias show. We know what's happening. We enjoy this. But then once it goes down to face versus heel, everybody jumps sides, and they were all behind Bobby the whole time. Even after Elias was cleared out of the ring, everybody was giving Bobby a lot of pop and reaction.
Cam, what else do you have for Enrique?
Are people, like, after, I don't know, 3-4 months and after these really strange segments over the last month, are people excited to see Sasha and Bayley together?
That's a great question. I don't know. If they keep doing, because this has really been just the same set of, like, 2 month storylines at a time. It's strenuous. Sasha gets upset. And now we're making up again, and I'm sure very near future we'll start getting strenuous situations. If they keep trying to feed us the same thing, I'm sure that the universe will eventually turn on them too. For now, Bayley's so over, and so is Sasha on an individual level, that when you prod them out together and in a face situation, everybody just, they love them. There was not a single boo in the house for either of them or anything that they did. So I'm sure that eventually if they keep going with the same thing over and over again, they'll turn on them, but from what the crowd reaction was tonight, they weren't tired of them at all. They loved them. Bayley had a bigger reaction than Sasha, but they were both super over.
Nice. Very nice.
Interesting. On the there's one other segment that I was curious about. Now I forgot what I was going to ask about. It wasn't... Oh, I guess Apollo Crews and Akam in the that segment, did they hold the audience's attention? It wasn't a really long segment. And it was pretty decent action, but did it seem like the crowd was just looking at this as filler, or were they at all interested?
Definitely filler. There was a little bit of pop when the AOP music hit from the hardcore NXT fans, but once they got in the ring, it was just like autopilot. The crowd was just like, all right, I know we got to fill 10 minutes. Just get us to the next thing.
Wow. Yeah. So what was the crowd like tonight? Size-wise, like how full?
Oh, size-wise. So the upper deck was totally tarped off except for the side that faces the hard camera. So, I mean, this arena for like concerts and events like this as their floor season, they hold about 20,000. I would say there was maybe 12. Everything that was available was full, but they had a good portion of the top section roped off, so there was no seating there.
And did you get there in time to see any matches taped before Raw?
We saw the second match, so it was Tyler Breeze versus Curt Hawkins, and it was maybe like 6 or 7 minute match, and the losing streak continues.
Well, that could apply to Tyler Breeze these days, but okay, I think I know who you meant.
This is true.
And no idea what happened to the first match?
I don't. We walked in probably about 20 minutes before Raw went on the air, and Tyler Breeze was making his entrance.
Oh, okay. All right. And then was there an advertised match that took place after Raw?
So there was an advertised match. Last week I got the email from WWE.com. So the match they were advertising was Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, and Braun Strowman versus Baron Corbin, Kevin Owens, Drew McIntyre, and Dolph Ziggler. So when Raw went off the air, Lesnar left. We expected that to happen. Baron Corbin took the microphone and started taunting Roman Reigns, saying, well, first he started saying that we all know why Lesnar left. It's because everybody knows what he would have done to him had he stuck around. Got the typical heel booze. And then started calling out Roman. Finn Balor's music hits. And Balor runs out and immediately just runs to the ring, tackles him, and they start brawling. A few seconds later, McIntyre and Ziggler run out together and start teaming up on Balor. At that point, Seth runs out with a chair, clears house, helps Balor up. They stand in the ring, take all the cheers from the crowd, and at that point, the heels leave, and they're just soaking it up for a couple minutes, and that was the end of the show. So they didn't go with the match that they were advertised. I'm assuming it's because of the Roman storyline that he was banned from the building and stuff like that, but that's, they cut it short there at the end.
Did the fans seem to care that there's this massive 8-man tag match and they got more of an angle than a match?
No, it didn't look like it. Honestly, the only way that we knew about it was from that email, so I'm going to assume that not everybody checked that email or saw that email or even understood what it was saying, so they were just excited to hear Finn Balor's music again, and then see Seth run out with that chair and start cleaning house.
All right. I still disagree with that approach. I just think if you want someone to buy a ticket, tell them, here's the stars who are going to be there. But don't consistently advertise a match and lean on that asterisk card subject to change when you have a track record of more often than not delivering what you're advertising. I mean, it just seems wrong to me. Am I wrong, Cam, to make a big deal out of it, even if, quote, fans don't care?
You're making a lot of sense, Wade.
Yeah, okay.
Especially in this environment where, you know, we want our stars to be there. Who you tell me is going to be there is probably who should show up. That's probably what I should get, especially when you have so much control over the things that we see, especially off of TV. So,
I mean, they all showed up. I just think they should be in the match that WWE went to the trouble to tell somebody to advertise.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. They're there, so if they're there, give me what you told me you're going to give me. Like,
put Braun Strowman in the ring for a match. There's somebody in that audience who really wanted to see that. And if WWE felt it wasn't important, they wouldn't put it in the email. If they didn't think that fans cared about that match being advertised, they wouldn't bother to advertise a match. So if you think it's important enough to advertise, then don't, like, knowingly not deliver on it without an apology or a better explanation. If ever, you know, if they did a tag match with two of them against two of them, and then two singles matches with each of them against each of them, that's one thing. But to not even see Braun in a match, or you know what, it's just like that. I just think it's wrong. But, and I don't think it's that controversial to think it's wrong, but WWE keeps doing it somewhat shamelessly, I think. But hey, asterisk, card subject to change. So,
There's nothing wrong with thinking that it's wrong. It definitely borders on false advertising or bait and switch, but
yeah,
it felt like in the moment everybody got all the faces and everybody who they were mostly showing up to see, with Seth and Finn rule the ring for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
So prisoner of the moment kind of thing. They all were ecstatic at the time.
Yeah, and I get that. And I'm sure that's what drives WWE to say, come for this match and give us your money, but we most weeks are going to change our mind and deliver something different, but you'll be happy anyway. And it's like, well, then just don't advertise a match. You know, just why take people's money under false pretense? Don't take people's money under false pretense. And if you know you have a track record of changing your mind, even if that at the moment was what you hoped or intended to do, stop advertising it. I don't get it. I just think it's not an honorable way to go about business when the pattern is there more often than not. So, and it's easy to fix. Just say, these are the stars who are appearing. And in some form or fashion, you're going to see them against each other. Not all stars are guaranteed to wrestle. I mean, just be honest. You'll still sell nearly as many tickets, but then you can feel good at, you know, rest your head well at night. Although I'm sure they rest their head just fine.
Absolutely.
All right. So what's going to be your favorite moment of this night when you look back on it 6-8 months from now?
Definitely the Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre match. That match was everything that I expected when they announced it last week on Raw. It made me excited to come to the show tonight. They started off quick, and it was entertaining the whole way through. There were no lulls in the action. Crowd was into it. It's definitely the match the moments that are going to stick out to me about this show.
And what'd you pay for a ticket? Where'd you sit? And do you think you got a good value for that money?
Yeah, absolutely. We sat lower bowl, about the 30th row, so towards the top of the lower bowl, facing the ramp and the entrance. And we paid about $60 on them, second market retailer, about a week ago only. So,
did you pay more or less in face value? Do you know?
Yeah, I was tracking them on Ticketmaster and on StubHub, to be honest. So I did pay less than what it seemed like for more or less the same seat going through the direct vendor.
All right, cool. Cam, you have any final questions for Enrique?
I think just the only thing I'm curious about, you talked about Drew McIntyre being in the best match of the night. Talking to some people on Twitter, and some people say they just don't see it. And I just think that he's miles past what he used to be. He has a great look. He wrestles fantastic. Is the reaction in the building for Drew McIntyre the reaction of a budding star?
Not yet. It's not. And I think that most of the people watching him on this level still maybe associate him with his first run in the WWE and not following him on his indie trail, and then even into NXT. I mean, when he came back into NXT, totally different look, totally different person, different athlete, everything. He was miles ahead of what he was with 3MB and everything back in the day. Mm-hmm. So I think that now that he's on the main roster, it's been a couple months, they paired him with Ziggler, who's a recognizable name and face. It's going to start building because he's got all the talent, and it seems like they're going to write him in that right direction. But it's not there yet. They're not reacting to him like they do a top star yet.
Gotcha.
All right, interesting. Well, Enrique, I appreciate taking time to talk to us.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Salamonster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, wait, aren't you going to put any pants on? He just goes, no time for pants, and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
Since 2007, The Salamonster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
All right, we're going to get to email in just a moment. Cam, I want to give you a chance to talk about the shows that you are part of, other than this show, on a semi-regular basis. Go ahead and tell people what the other shows are about, how they can check you out.
So, yeah, on Wednesday evenings, 6:30 Central, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central on Blog Talk Radio, I co-host the Pro Wrestling Torch East Coast cast with Travis Bryant, covering the week in wrestling. We typically start off with the Twitter polls we run every week just about the goings-on in pro wrestling. And then we get to a point where we take calls for anywhere from 2 to 3 hours about wrestling, pop culture, music, kind of whatever happens.
Wait, and then, 2 to 3 hours? That can't be right.
Well, I've found a way to where I'm on for about 90 minutes because reasons. But yeah, the show itself is about 2 to 3 hours. you're a VIP member, you can hear Travis Bryant and Rich Fan go for another 2 or 3 hours in the VIP section just talking about everything. So, fun show to be a part of every week. Great cast of callers, always looking for new callers. And so, yeah, eastcoastcast.com or blogtalkradio.com and East Coast Cast. And then on the VIP side, I do a show called You, Me, and Wrestling, where I interview a fan about a different point in wrestling, about who they were a fan of, who they didn't like, their favorite matches and moments of that era, how they compared with the wrestlers and moments of today. I throw in a couple of curveballs, and my biggest thing, I like to get a very diverse group, people from different places, different ages, different backgrounds. This week, I actually had on Andrew Pollard, who is a journalist in the UK, and we talked about late 80s, early 90s WWF, talked a lot about Ultimate Warrior, Davey Boy Smith, what he liked about Bret Hart, what he didn't like about Shawn Michaels. So, fun show every week, always looking for new guests, and you can just send an email to SouthCongress@gmail.com. I'll send you out the questionnaire, and maybe you can be a guest on the show.
All right, cool. Let's jump to the email. We'll go to Paul from Ridge, New York. Biggest thought that I had about the night, if Brock doesn't care, why should I? I think I know what he just did there. If I wasn't looking forward to another Seth and Drew match, I would have switched to another channel. I don't think that is a desired result. WWE wanted people like me not caring at all. Now, I can't believe they're doing a women's pay-per-view. It's changed my life so much since I was the one elected to get tickets to it for my friend and for my friend and I to go. Okay, it wasn't done as much tonight as it was on SmackDown last week. Also, I kind of zoned out when they talked about Evolution tonight. Seriously, though, since it is on Long Island and we are as well, we are looking forward to it. It's amazed me how much like 98-99 WWE has become, though. A main event scene that's just horrible right now, but an undercard that's full of wrestlers I actually care about and want to see. Last thought, it was nice to see them address a question I had in mind last week. Can Braun cash in on the contract before SummerSlam? Obviously, the answer is yes, and this just means KO will try to stop him if he tries. Of course, he needs Brock to leave the room where he is just sitting and not doing anything first. Actually, why can't Braun just cash it in? And if Brock refuses to fight, he gets stripped of the title and Braun's the new champ. Paul from Ridge, New York. Ken, we haven't talked about this yet, but what did you think of the way that they drew that out and entered that stipulation into the picture, that thought in people's mind that, you know, maybe Brock's not just scared of Reigns or not just disinterested, but nervous about Braun cashing in?
I think that's what you need to do. I think that Brock Lesnar's still a three-dimensional character, even if he's not always doing things that fans want. And Braun Strowman should be scary. Like, they've had a one-on-one match, you know, last year that Brock won, but Money in the Bank, people typically win those matches. They come out of nowhere. They catch you when you're off guard. And so if I don't have to show up, it's a great reason not to, because I won't lose my title. Like, I'm not going to put myself in a bad position for no reason. So I like that. I like the intrigue. You know, it's rough when you compare it to a 98-99 WCW, because, like, literally, if you wait the next night, you're about to get a SummerSlam main event of AJ Styles and Samoa Joe. Like, that's still the main event, even if it's on a different day. Like, they're, the top of the card is still really good, and the undercard is really good as far as talent goes. Again, you can take out 15 minutes or 20 minutes of SummerSlam, and the rest of it can still be really good. If Brock Lesnar isn't your cup of tea, and he's probably going to put on a really good match because that's what he does. So, I don't know. I don't gauge my level of interest by the athlete's level of interest. There are plenty of great football games between great football players who weren't interested in playing football. They did it because they were good at it and they performed. So, again, I can't let his attitude dictate my fan, especially if he's going to go out there and still put on a quality match.
All right. Let's go to this. It is only in the frame for like a half a second. This is from Evan. It's only in the frame for like a half a second before the cameraman changes the angles, but there's a South Park reference. Let me open this file. There's a fan holding up a sign that says, Roman likes fish stick. So Evan just wanted to point that out to people that was in there.
Fantastic.
Yes. All right. All right. Philip from DC. Let's see. Mike Cole just said that Akam was 6'5", 250 pounds from Punjab, India. So apparently, Akam is Jinder Mahal reincarnated. That kind of lack of attention to detail is so frustrating when you consider how long Cole has been doing this. If he doesn't care to flip the page of the script to the next segment, why should I care to listen to anything he has to say? An occasional slip of the tongue is forgivable most times. Good, because I have those. But to flat-out botch a wrestler's bio does a disservice to the wrestler and the product. And how does Coach not know that a backstage tape promo from AOP is about to air right before a match involving AOP? I'm ready for a reset to the commentary team. Give me Mauro, Nigel, and Percy ASAP. And go VIP ASAP. Without having time to watch the G1, the Torch, written and audio reports keeps me well-informed on everything I need to know. So it's Philip from D.C. Cam, your thoughts?
I kind of want to give them a pass tonight. It doesn't – they're typically very on the money. Even if it's being fed to them, they're very good at communicating the information they're supposed to. But, you know, Michael Cole's been in WWE almost 20 years. So I like to believe that when something happens like a Brian Christopher passing, that's probably on his mind. Like, usually don't see him off of his game. So when I think about the recency of something like that, and especially that he doesn't really botch lines often, you know, it happens. I'm not going to let that take away from what I was watching tonight. Because he's, whether you like Michael Cole or not, he's efficient at what he's asked to do. So making a mistake like this doesn't bother me too much. It was noticeable because the things you were saying, I was like, wait a minute, he's not even Indian. So what's happening? But yeah, you know, it's a bad night. But when something like this happens, when you open the show with, you know, these wrestler bios of people who have passed, I don't expect everything to be perfectly smooth that same night.
All right, Mika and Alicia from Cincinnati say, hey, Wade, hope you're doing well. Just a quick question regarding tonight's Raw. Do you think the Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar feud has the potential of being booed out of the building at SummerSlam? Similar to the Lesnar-Goldberg match at Mania 20. Honestly, we are getting sick of it. As someone who went to Raw last week, use someone besides Roman. You've got two amazing babyfaces in Strowman and Seth. Their pops last week were amazing. Thanks for the great podcast. We listen every week. Thank you. Going full circle back to our initial conversation, Cam, is what's your thought at this moment? And I know we got a couple shows to go on the crowd reaction to Reigns and Lesnar.
It was good tonight. It really was good tonight. Now that we have this conflicting report of how much of what we heard was actually what happened, that takes away from it a bit, but seemed to be a positive reaction for Reigns, and people seem to be upset with Brock Lesnar. And the last couple of weeks, I think Reigns has been pretty good. I think that matching him up against Bobby Lashley, who's very physical, who has a legit claim to why he should be the number one contender, and then having Reigns beat him clean, like I think all these things are important. Booed out of the building, I don't think so. I just don't think people are going to keep that same energy, especially if they feel like Brock Lesnar may be gone after this for the way that he's behaving, if that's their prerogative. Like, no. But also, like I say all that to say, SummerSlam's in New York, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They boo everybody in New York. I was in New York for like a week. I've seen some things made. They'll boo everybody. So potential, yes. Right now, I don't think it's going to happen, though. He wasn't booed out of the building at WrestleMania, even though people did things. So I don't think this is going to be that type of reaction.
All right, we got a question from Jonathan from Sunderland, England. Due to Brock's limited appearances, would it not make Braun look like a complete buffoon if he doesn't attempt to cash in on Brock tonight? He hasn't been in WWE for 3 months. Why would Braun risk missing a good and rare opportunity? Love your shows, especially The Fix. Keep up the good work. You make my gym sessions bearable. Does Braun look bad for not just going, you're never around? I might lose this thing on a fluke. I learned that earlier in the show, that the cards are stacked against me. And so I need to take this opportunity while I can and cash in. Does Braun look like he let an opportunity slip by?
I don't think so. I think he has to get KO out of there first. Like, I think that you have to handle that. Even if there's a potential of you using it, I think you have to get him all the way out of the way, because just historically, Kevin Owens will attack his best friends if it's going to suit him at the time. So I think you handle business first. And then when you don't have somebody in front of you or somebody gunning for you specifically, because there's not going to be a second person that's going to get a shot at Money in the Bank. Mm-hmm. I just think you have to be in the best position to do it. You saw what happened to Baron Corbin when he had Money in the Bank, because he was spreading himself too thin by beefing with John Cena. So I think that they treat Braun like he's smart. Like, he's not big, dumb giant or aloof giant. Seems to be very aware of what's going on around him. So, no, I think you take care of your business first, and then you gun for the champ.
All right. Josh says, so the common opinion is that at SummerSlam, Roman Reigns wins the title and Brock disappears to UFC, never to return again. Here's my question. If I follow WWE storyline logic, then just about every single time someone loses their title, there's a rematch clause. So am I supposed to believe that the guy who signs the huge, super one-sided contract didn't think to put a rematch clause in once he loses his title? And by the way, I don't think Roman finally beating Brock after all his handed opportunities would exactly make Brock his bitch. And last, but certainly not least, did anyone else notice Brock was reading through his magazine backwards? Jeez. Thanks for getting me through my work days, Wade. You truly rock. Thank you, Josh. Appreciate the kind words. You know, Brock, I think you can go through a magazine backwards. I don't think that's... It's not like a... Going through a book backwards is crazy, but going through a magazine backwards isn't that big of a deal.
I was just going to say, no, he was just reading manga, so you read that backwards. It was just hidden inside because he didn't want anybody to know to read. But no, yeah, magazines, you can read those back and forth. Like, you typically look for the big quotes that you want to pull out, and then you read the article. So, right. By the way, Wade, I sent you a picture of Brock Lesnar reading the copy of The Torch where Ric Flair wins the WWF title. So you'll see that thing.
Oh, cool. Good. I look forward to seeing that. Yeah, so I guess the rematch clause, I mean, WWE is sort of selective when it comes to when they want to bring that up. And if Brock has only one match left on his contract and he loses, maybe that negates the rematch clause.
Yeah, I don't think Brock's worried about a rematch clause at all.
Yes.
I think he's like, yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm good. I'm going to go handle other things, or I'll get a title shot again later. Like, Goldberg never got a rematch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get bringing that up, and it's fine, and I think that would be nice if WWE crossed their T's and dotted those I's, but what you going to do? Okay, Evan says, you got to interrupt this guy. This is killing me. He sent that about 10 minutes into the show. Cam, what's he talking about?
Well, he was talking about our first caller.
Yeah, I know.
And I think that, I mean, he did kind of warn us at the beginning that he had, you know, a ways to go. But no, I do understand what he's saying, though, because I feel that way, too. Like, if Brock Lesnar's very true to who he's always been, and so if the authenticity of Brock Lesnar is something you like, then these things just won't throw you off. Just a lot of us, you've worked for yourself forever, so there's...
I work for the listeners and readers, Cam.
What I'm saying is there's a level of attention you have to pay to the things that you do. But I've always been of the belief that, you know, this whole thing of everybody should work as hard as they possibly can because that shows worth. It's like, well, in all fairness, we don't all have the same abilities, and some of us are just allowed different privileges. Mm-hmm. And I think you should put in as much effort as you need to be successful. Hard work is definitely great and noble and something to admire, but I don't expect everybody to put the same effort because we have different abilities. We don't all have to try it. And so, again, I don't know who would say, I'm going to work 40 hours a week for less money than they pay for working 10.
Yeah.
You're smarter if you work 10.
Yes.
Better for you. Like, I think that he was making a very good point, even if he did take the long way around to get to it.
All right, Joe M. says, hey, Wade, tonight we saw Kevin Owens take the Money in the Bank briefcase during Braun's match with Jinder, and Braun immediately went chasing. Maybe I didn't hear it, but what's a big deal if Kevin took the case? He's then the holder of the contract and can cash it in? If that's the case, that, no pun intended, then why have the Money in the Bank match at all if anyone can steal the case and cash it in? I took a break from wrestling and missed the inception of the Money in the Bank gimmick. What do you think Kevin Owens was trying to do there or thought he was getting away with?
Well, I just think that Braun is, you know, he has these stipulations against him. I think seeing Kevin Owens probably already upsets him. But then in the moment, you know, being in a match, it being intense, like seeing him take that away from you, I do think that's distracting. Like, Wade, one of your favorite interviewers, one of my favorite people to hear, Sean Waltman, made a career in early, you know, WCW of just taking the title. Of just taking the cruiserweight title from whoever was a champ and walking out with it, which in a backwards way used to get him title shots, and he'd win the Cruiserweight title. So, yeah, I just think that, you know, as a wrestler, as a top athlete, your territory, you don't want anything taken from you. So it was just him reacting to that. But, you know, it in no way actually influenced the match. It was just Kevin Owens being a jerk and breaking territory. And Braun took that person.
All right, Zach in Texas says, as a man, I got to say Ronda looked really good in that rowdy tank top. More importantly, though, as a wrestling fan, I continue to be impressed with her work. They made her live up to the moniker, the baddest woman on the planet, far better than I thought they would. It also helps that her moves look so legit, mostly because they are. The only thing that bothers me is that her spinning Samoan drop looks brutal, especially now that she's mastered it. But the only person who really sold it is Stephanie. Everyone else has popped up quickly for such an impactful move. Am I being too nitpicky? Also, how long do you think her match with Fox is going to last next week? 30 seconds? 45 seconds? VIP is awesome. Zach in Texas. Thanks, Zach. Cam, yeah, what's the over-under on the match length?
Minute and a half.
Yeah.
I say 90 seconds. Alicia will get in a little bit of crazy. She'll do something really strange, and then Ronda will stare her down. She'll freeze up and then catch a Samoan drop in an armbar.
Yeah, I would take the under on it, but, I mean, it's not a bad over-under. But, yeah, they're not going to have Rousey in a competitive match on Raw. This is just to give her a decisive win, and Alicia Fox is obnoxious, and fans will cheer.
It's a really good move. Like, that Samoan drop looks great. I do think that Alicia Fox recovered too fast.
Mm-hmm.
She's either out, or you just have Ronda push her down, go after Alexa, and then she pops back up. Because, it's great looking for it to not have her laid out for the duration of that segment.
I got a question from Dave from Holyoke, Massachusetts. I had a quick question on Finn. Like many, I'm a huge fan of Finn Balor. Watching him lose tonight and get beat up after the match as well makes me wonder how far can he go in a Vince McMahon WWE. I know he won the Universal title right away, but will he ever get back out there or back up there? Or do you think this is his level the next couple of years? Also, as a quick side note, I really enjoyed B-Team on commentary. Bo's charisma reminded me of that from NXT. When they lose eventually to the Revival or Authors of Pain, do you think B-Team turns into Rhino and Slater? Thanks a lot. Keep up the great work. So, two questions there, Cam. I think the post-match beatdown of Balor is a setup for the Demon to return at SummerSlam. That's what came to mind for me. Also, they are pushing Corbin. They're trading wins. And I think Finn is not that... He is a little above or a little below Baron Corbin in Vince McMahon's eyes. And they're both very different wrestlers in very different roles. And so I just think trading wins is a reflection on how they feel about him. But I would say that they're pretty high on Baron Corbin. So I wouldn't take losing to Corbin as a sign that they don't have any faith in Finn Balor. But it does indicate, you know, Finn is a guy that they want trading wins back and forth with guys. He's not being protected at the top level. But, you know, Seth Rollins lost some, you know, to some people. Reigns loses every now and then. So, I don't know. I mean, you got to have wins and losses. And, I mean, it was a long match and clean. So, you know, it defines him down a little bit. But I think it's reflective of Vince just not having any faith in the guy to be a top-tier guy. It's just not the moment that he's being protected. Cam, what was your take on that?
On a really large roster, I think he's the number five babyface on Raw. Because you have Reigns, you have Rollins, then you have Lashley, then you have Strowman, or Strowman above Lashley, and then it's Finn Balor. And if they're all, you know, singles guys, like, it does kind of have him on the lower end of the top tier, because, like, Finn Balor wasn't going to be, you know, backstage when Mojo Rawley and Bobby Roode get into it. Like, he's not going to be in that locker room. But he hovers right above that. And I don't think it's any type of demotion for him, but those guys on top, like, it's Roman Reigns and then everybody else kind of, but the other four guys, three guys in that mix are really good, or they're Vince McMahon prototype. Like, Bobby Lashley is that. Braun Strowman is that. Seth has always been treated as a main eventer since his time in Shield, so, I mean, he's right there. Like, a trade will probably benefit Finn Balor if that is to happen, but yeah, I do think that finally get that Demon character back from SummerSlam. Does it elevate him above those guys? I don't think so, but it keeps him from that next tier. And Bo Dallas is fun. Like, those Rotunda kids are really charismatic. They really are good. But I think that it's weird to say, are they going to be, you know, pushed down to the level of a Heath Slater and a Rhino, because that's where they were a month ago. You know,
yeah.
that's kind of where they already existed. So this is kind of a bump up for them. But yeah, I think once it runs its course, they kind of hover back down there. That ain't a bad.
Chris from Toronto says, hi, Wade. I have to say the angle with Brock, Heyman, and Kurt was superb. Brock and Paul were absolutely fantastic in their roles, and it was nice to see Angle show some guts and stand up for himself. Just imagine how great it would be if the heels were actually up against a popular babyface. I can't help but think if Rollins was facing Brock at SummerSlam, this would be seen as a star-making angle that could really propel him to the top of the company. And instead, no matter what they do, most will be dissatisfied because it's against Roman. It's such a missed opportunity. Cam, that is worth underlining. Imagine if they reshuffled things a little bit and Seth was going to be the beneficiary of ending the Universal title reign and be the top champ on Raw. Do they end up in a better place today after SummerSlam than with the plan that they're going with?
You get a better reaction that night. You get a better reaction the next night. And Seth Rollins is even on social media, you know, in character, constantly saying how he's there all the time, which yeah. I don't necessarily like, but I do think it responds to the segment of fans who not only agree with that, but when he's out there, he's putting on these great matches all the time. So he definitely, if anybody can say that, it's him. But yes, I do think they're in a better position with fans, both in the building and going forward, if this is Seth Rollins challenging Brock Lesnar instead of Roman Reigns.
Yeah, yep. I agree. All right, Cam, I appreciate your time on today's program. Always fun to have you on.
Everybody on Instagram, follow PW Torch.
Yes.
We're doing fun stuff over there. Yep. Pictures now, video to come soon. It's going to be a good time.
At PW Torch on Instagram, at PW Torch on Twitter, and Facebook.com/PW Torch. If you want to like our brand on Facebook, you can follow me at The Wade Keller on Twitter and Facebook.com/Wade Keller Torch to friend me on Facebook. Cam, how can people follow you on social media?
Instagram and Twitter. You can follow me at Seahawk. It's C-E-E-H-A-W-K. And you can also follow the South Congress podcast. Just South Congress on Twitter, South Congress podcast on Instagram, and then whatever you listen to podcasts on. The South Congress podcast. This week, we reviewed the documentary Shy Boys about incel culture. So that was really interesting. And we made fun of R. Kelly for not being able to read. So, good times.
And how do you spell South Congress?
South Congress with a K. It's SOUTHKONGRESS.
Sounds good. Wanted to get that in there. All right, Cam, thanks so much. And thanks for our outside correspondent and our the two callers we got to. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.